Blog Talk Radio.
Life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Monday, January 3rd, and I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us right now in the live chicken chat room. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guests when we have them on. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button at our homepage there at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about our passion of backyard poultry, show poultry, and sustainable living. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. Hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at eggcartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waterers, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912 936-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today, our first day back of 2011 on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is now time to introduce my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate and author, Pat Foreman. Welcome, Pat. Happy New Year.
Hey, Whisperer. Yes, indeed. Happy New Year to you. I think it's going to be a fabulous year. I think it's certainly going to be a powerful poultry year if things are shaping up the way they were taken off from last year. So how was your Christmas? Was Santa good to you? Did you get some chicken gifts for Christmas?
No chicken gifts, just practical gifts, and really our gifts to each other, Jen and I, were one, a newly remodeled bathroom from basically the studs up that we've had the contractor been working on off and on for about 3 months, so it is now finished, the farmhouse bathroom remodel, so that was Jen's Christmas gift, and then mine, of course, was the 1953 Ford Jubilee 50th anniversary tractor. And so we basically put what we would have spent on Christmas gifts into the farmhouse and the land down there. But we had a wonderful, wonderful break. Other than about 3 days, we spent the majority of our time down at the farmhouse and got a lot of work done down there. I did post some pictures both on my personal Facebook page and on the Chicken Whisperer fan page. Had a great time. In fact, this week, for the whole week, we really worked improving the land. We actually I got the harrow out and prepared the soil on the back 40, and we put down about 200 pounds of winter rye, like I told you before the end of the year on the radio show. So we got that, got the harrow out and prepared the soil and spread out the winter rye and just touched over it a little bit with the harrow again to smooth things out. And then, of course, got that done. Then we prepared our blueberry, strawberry, and raspberry beds, again with the tractor, got that all taken care of. Then we got the old post hole digger, and we put up some lattice. We got some 8-foot-long landscape timbers and some really nice white lattice. You can see those pictures on our Facebook page, and we put up 3 4-by, really it ended up being about 7 feet tall, 4-by-7-foot lattice. For the raspberries to grow up. And then, of course, we planted 6 blueberry plants. We planted 6 raspberry plants, and then we got 6 grape plants, but we didn't have time to plant the grape vines and the lattice work for that. So that'll be on maybe our next trip down when we go down in a couple of weeks to pick out a place. And then we planted 12 fruit trees. We got plums, pears, peaches, and apples. And so we planted about 12 fruit trees, and so hopefully in 2 to 3 years they'll be giving back, giving us some work. We have a little orchard area down there, again, kind of practicing what we preach here on the radio show when it comes to sustainability. So hopefully we'll have some good raspberries, some blueberries, some grapes, lots of fruit trees, and a good cover crop of winter rye to turn over in the spring when we start planting down there, our watermelon, cantaloupe, corn, beans, peas, tomatoes, cucumber, you name it, down in the lower field. So we were busy beavers, let me tell you, down there, but we had a really fun time, and I loved seeing our friends down there and got a lot of work done on the farm. So it was really a nice, relaxing, pleasant 2 weeks. And so, but it is good to be back every day now, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio with the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show. And you, Pat, how about your last couple of weeks since Christmas? What have you been up to?
Oh, my goodness. It was interesting because just before the show, I was looking over my my journal and my calendar, and it's been so rich. It's been like a piece of super rich chocolate fudge kind of things, the camaraderie with friends and just kind of joyful. But I got to tell you, my highlight, I realized, was a movie. And I watched this movie 3 times. It was Temple Grandin. Have you seen the movie out about Temple Grandin? It won five Emmy Awards. It was
what
so book? Phenomenal.
What movie is that?
Temple Grandin, T-E-M-P-L-E, and then Grandin, G-R-A-N-D-I-N. She's the animal scientist. Oh, go ahead.
I have not seen it, no.
It's a keeper. I want to get one for my library. But she's the animal scientist, autistic doctor, professor, who thinks like animals think. And she's written wonderful works both about how autism is and how it's changing how people are viewing autism, as well as how the management of our food animals are. And half the animals now in the U.S., the slaughterhouses have been redesigned using her techniques. And this movie was just absolutely fabulous. I mean, it was so beautifully done. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was my phone, no problem.
Oh, okay. Well, one of the things, I will go on and on about it, but I really highly, highly recommend it on so many levels, not only being responsible and knowing where our food comes from and how it's treated, but also autism and how people do think differently. I mean, I realize that I'm a visual thinker. I think in pictures, and I doodle a lot, interestingly, with my notes to be just as many sketches as those words almost. And other people are very verbal, so they'll just write, and others are very auditory, so they'll express themselves auditory. So it's also an exploration into how our minds work and how being different does not mean being less. It's just being different, and that was one of the big messages. So, anyway, that's just kind of a summary and one of my highlights, besides all the camaraderie and cheer. So, I'm so looking forward to 2011. When we were talking last year, remember just after New Year's, we were saying, 2010 is going to be just phenomenal.
I remember,
raise the bar a little bit. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I completely remember that. I did watch a movie that you recommended as well over the last couple of weeks. I watched the movie Dirt. And me and Jen, we have for the last 3 years, no phone, no internet, no cable, no satellite, no nothing down at the farmhouse. We actually did get internet, DSL down there finally, it's not quite as fast as what we have up here in Atlanta, but it gets the job done, and still no TV, no satellite, no phone, no nothing like that, but due to the fact that we wanted to do some radio shows down there over the holiday, we did get the internet installed. So we joined, we had many, a few years ago, we were with Netflix, and then we just kind of canceled it. We were staying so busy. But down at the farmhouse, it's a great alternative. So we joined Netflix up again, and where we get the instant movies, and of course, I don't know, a movie as much as we want, a DVD. And you can, as you know, as you stated last time, you can watch it on Netflix. So we remembered that, and we watched it. And it's a good movie. It's very interesting. I think that they probably could have got their message across in about 30 minutes instead of an hour and 30 minutes. I think some of it, I think some of it was very repetitious. Okay, a soil is a living organism. Okay, next, you know, instead of saying that 400,000 times. I think it's a good movie. If you do have an hour and a half of time that you'd like to watch it, great, I would recommend it. But I just, in my 2 cents worth, not being a famous movie critic or anything, think that it probably could have done it in about 30 or 45 minutes because a lot of it was repetitious on the points that they made. But other than that, very good movie, and would recommend for others to watch that as well. So we did watch that, and thought it was pretty good. So we've got great 2011 listed for everybody. Of course, all of our guests are continuing and have signed on again for another great year. And today is no exception. It's another and our first show for the year, another great episode of the Preparedness Show with Aaron Mackley. And today we talked over the holidays and we talked about today's subject a little bit and how we thought it would be very, very interesting. We'll get to that in about 15 minutes after our Chickens in the News segment. I have a few to mention. But today's topic, we're going to be talking all about the ramifications of an extended power outage and items that disappear first in that situation. And so very, very interesting topic because this could happen to any of us at any time for many, many different reasons, whether it be hurricanes or tornadoes or ice storms or regardless of what the case may be. So, and it's something today I think more people just think, oh, the power's out, darn, I'm inconvenienced, I can't watch Days of Our Lives. Oops, the power's out, darn, I can't blow dry my hair. You know, that type of thing. But I think long-term, and this could be, you know, 2 to 3 days, could have some more serious ramifications that people just don't think about other than the inconvenience of maybe not having to watch Days of Our Lives or maybe not being able to blow dry their hair because the power's out. So this is going to extend over into not getting money out of the ATMs if you use those, not being able to get gas because the gas pumps are out because they run on electricity, to maybe one day not having clean water if you're on city water because there's no pumps to get that sewage back to the power plant or the water treatment plant, and no power to run the filters to filter the water to get water back to you. So just different things like that we're going to talk about when we welcome Aaron Mackley with the Preparedness Show today. So great show for that today. And I believe tomorrow we're going to have the Heritage Chef, Steve Pope, again, first Tuesday of the month. So we're looking forward to that. And then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we've got some great shows for you as well. So we'll be updating the calendar and show topics and things like that for everybody. So we're looking forward to another great year with all of you. In fact, this year is going to mark our 2-year anniversary. In fact, the first Saturday in February will mark our 2-year anniversary of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show. So we're very excited with that, and hopefully we'll have a special episode on that day, maybe not on that Saturday, but maybe that Friday if there's not going to be a Saturday show. So let's go ahead and get into Chickens in the News, and I'll share a few with you. Before we get to half past the hour, we'll go to another commercial break and then come back with Aaron Mackley and the Preparedness Show. I just ran across this one this morning. Very interesting. Kind of makes you go, And this came to us from CNN. You can see it on CNN.com. What made thousands of birds fall from the sky? Yes, thousands of birds. Officials estimated that 4,000 to 5,000 similar red-winged blackbirds fell out of the sky. This comes to us today, January 3rd. It has become one of the strangest stories to come out of the new year and one of the most puzzling for scientists and local officials. Just what caused 5,000 birds to fall from the sky just before midnight New Year's Eve in Beebe, Arkansas? As news of the story spread across the globe, so did speculation about what caused the Hitchcockian scene. And as officials wait for the official necropsy, we're taking a look at some of the theories that officials and scientists have suggested. Weather-related. Karen Rowe, an ophthalmologist with the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, said the incident is not that unusual and is often caused by a lightning strike or high-altitude hail. This theory could hold in this case, she said, especially because a strong storm system moved through the state earlier on Friday. Keith Stevens, a spokesperson for the commission, told Reuters that storm weather, including hail or lightning, could be the culprit, but so far he had yet to see any sign of injury on birds that were collected. Rowe told Live Science that events like this have happened across the globe, and generally weather is to blame. She said birds have been swept up and moved when caught up in hurricanes. Wind can force them into a large object like a cliff, or large groups of birds can clash and clash in heavy fog, then killing them. Fireworks. On CNN's America's Morning, Stephen told Karen Chetney and Jim Acosta that in addition to weather, local New Year's Eve celebrations may also be to blame. We're leaning towards maybe a stress event, he said. Stevenson said possibly shooting some fireworks while the birds were roosting could have scared them, causing trauma. That could have been what caused their deaths, he said. But birds don't fall out of the sky whenever there are fireworks. What makes this event different? Stephen said in that rural cases, birds can be more concentrated, and the fireworks were set off near them in a roosting area while they were sleeping. Such a trauma could have killed them. And then, of course, lesser stating poisoning or disease, being that all 5,000 at one time just, you know, succumbed to their disease and then fell out of the sky and died due to some air toxin or some type of disease. So this is very interesting. I posted this at our Facebook page, and so you can take a look at this article. I thought it was very interesting, and still nobody knows exactly what the culprit is, but you can speculate, and we'll keep you posted on that if we see any. Scrolling on down, very interesting. I know, Pat, that you'll like this next one, if I can find it. If it can open up here. All righty. Wolandilly Council urges residents to get chickens for their home. Can you believe it, Pat? And a council is actually requesting people and residents to get chickens.
It's just the tip of the iceberg. It's going to be happening just, more and more and more. Go ahead.
Just the tip of the iceberg. Wolandilly Council has challenged residents not to be chicken and get some chooks for their backyard. A council spokesperson said chickens make great pets, provide a steady supply of eggs, help dispose of chicken scraps, and produce ready-made fertilizer for the garden. She also said keeping chickens teaches children responsibility because they have to feed and water the birds and collect eggs. Wolandilly Mayor Michael Bancic said keeping chickens was a great idea, but residents need to consider several things before they bring their new family members home. Before you purchase any chickens, you should consider such things as the size of your block, how you house the chickens and protect them from being attacked by predators. If keeping chickens, residents should be careful of rats or mice living in the coops, offensive noises or odors caused by chickens, and drainage issues. The birds can be raised from a young age with some care and attention, or older chickens ready to lay can be easily bought. For more information about keeping chickens, phone the council, environmental officer, or visit the Sustainable Wolandilly page at the following website. So here we have a city urging their citizens and their residents to start a backyard flock. How cool is that, Pat?
That is so cool. And like I say, it's going to be quite the fashionable trend among city managers across the U.S., I think, and Canada. So they're starting to realize not only the charm of chickens, but also their utility as clucking civic solid waste workers. So, yeah, the stakes are high. That's a great article. I love that. Love it, love it.
And the last one I have here is from The Scene, Return of the Urban Chicken. This comes to us from Jen Lundstrom. A chicken in every pot has been used as a political promise and a slogan for hope for a brighter economic future since the last of the reign of Henry IV and as late as a successful 1928 Republican presidential campaign. The lowly chicken symbolizes prosperity for every man in such political pronouncements. Well, the chicken has returned to the political arena. However, this time, the egg definitely comes before the chicken. City dwellers across the country are petitioning their various governing bodies to allow them to raise chickens. When we say urban chickens, we're not talking about the noisy males of the species, the roosters, but quiet brooding hens and hens, as an ironic hipster once noted, are only an egg's way of making another egg. BackyardChickens.com keeps a running tally of states and communities that have gone over the foul side. 20 Wisconsin communities are listed in the backyard chicken side, including Nia, Green Bay, and a couple that I can't pronounce, Pat. What is prompting the growth of the city slicker chicken? I think there are a few reasons, said Ron Keene, University of Wisconsin Extension poultry specialist. Probably the economy to some degree. People are looking at ways that may be able to save money, whether or not that is something they can realize. I'm not sure. The whole local food movement, this gives them the feeling of producing their own food, the whole idea of getting back to something you can put your fingers around, and they feel like they're relating to grandma. Christina Hoy has become a champion of urban chickens. People have been calling me the chicken lady. Not sure if I like that, she said. Hoy and your family have several reasons for wanting to raise chickens in their backyard. Fresh eggs is a big one. It doesn't matter where you shop. You can't buy eggs from Wisconsin, Hoyt said. There's not a single egg from Wisconsin at Walmart or Festival Foods. They're coming from Iowa, Minnesota. I've never been able to find a Wisconsin egg. But backyard chickens are about more than eggs, they said. There are a variety of benefits. We have four children. I think it's important for kids to learn where their food comes from and how to be less of a consumer. We have chickens as a natural progression from having the garden. We're trying to educate kids on why it's so important to eat organically and support local sustainable farms. We talk about how the food had to, what the food had to go through before it came to our home. How many miles does that banana have on it? We try to buy as much local food as we can. And you continue to watch and read this story at our Chicken Whisperer Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. All righty, Pat, anything on your end?
I do. I've got one really nice story which I would love to see become a trend as well, and it's brief. This comes to us from the Herald Scotland, so it's from overseas, and the title is Ex-Battery Hens Are the Big Coop Winners as Suburban Scots Seek the Good Life. So what this is about is that the battery hens that were raised in the factory are being sold or given to people who want them instead of just put down. So it came out from Carolyn Wilson, and this is, I'm just going to read a little bit of it. It says it harks back to the self-sufficiency boom of the 1970s, which inspired the British sitcom. There's a sitcom called The Good Life. It was starring Felicity Kendall and Richard Beers. So the garden center retailers and animal charities say they have experienced a huge surge in the demand for egg-laying hens last year, and that suggests that the recession has sparked, of course, a new generation of suburban farmers. Well, we certainly have that here in America as well, as it's kind of going off the charts. But in the past few years, poultry keeping has enjoyed a massive growth, and this is the word massive, fueled by celebrity endorsement from really famous chefs, who successfully persuaded the mayonnaise manufacturer Hellmann's, I didn't realize this, but they persuaded Hellmann's mayonnaise to stop using eggs from battery hens. So now the estimates are that in Scotland, more than 500,000 homes now have their own fresh supply of eggs. And so what they're saying here in the bottom line is that in these times of recession, people are always looking for ways to save money, and hens are fascinating creatures to have. It's not unusual for us to rehome about 700 hens in a weekend. So 700 hens, these are factory farm hens that are going out to homes who want to have their own eggs. They say the hens are only useful to the battery farms for about a year, but they will continue to lay for years. So that's a really great way to supply hens as well as give creatures a new life. So that comes to us from the Herald Scotland. That's all I've got, Whisper.
Awesome. Thank you. And I agree with that. It's like, you know, if they're only going to use the hens for about a year based on their bottom line and the almighty dollar that, you know, that as far as the hens being as productive as possible, then and then instead of just putting them in a pit and burying them alive like we reported on a couple of weeks ago, or just taking thousands and thousands of baby chicks and drowning them in barrels like they did in Russia a few weeks ago, we reported on that. You know, what about, you know, taking some of this government waste? And boy, if you look at any of these bills that are coming out of Washington, you want to talk about loaded government waste that people try to, these congressmen and senators try to slip in there for to benefit either themselves or local votes. Now take some of that money and maybe get some of these spent hens, as they call them, and let's use some our tax dollars usefully. And maybe we can feed some hungry with this, you know, whether it be eggs, whether it be getting these chickens in the backyards, or even if it be using these spit hens if they're a year old and getting them processed and feeding the hungry across the United States that would love to have a nice chicken and dinner. I mean, if these chickens are going to be wasted anyway, let's do some good with them. And so unlike what they were doing over in Russia a couple of weeks ago, so. You know, that's always, and then we've talked about this before, you know, about the hens and feeding the hungry and, you know, all the male chicks that aren't wanted at many hatcheries across the country, whether it be commercial or more of a retail hatchery that provide backyard folks. Maybe we set up, you know, I don't know all the answers, But, you know, maybe we could do something like that and feed the hungry. That's often come up on this radio show regarding feeding the hungry and the spent hens or the male chicks that aren't wanted or requested at a lot of these hatcheries. So just I think there's a lot that can be done if people just get together and have the funds to do it and just do it. I think maybe that could be a solution. Well, thank you very much for sharing that. As always, our Chickens in the News segments are brought to you by Meyer Hatchery. You want to visit them online at meyerhatchery.com up in Polk, Ohio. Well, we visited a Meyer Hatchery a couple of months ago. Great location. We saw all of their production area with their incubators and their hatchers. Absolutely awesome. Great folks up there. Visit them online at meyerhatchery.com. All righty, Pat. Well, that was Chickens in the News. We're going to take a short break. It is exactly a half past the hour. We're going to go to a short commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to welcome Aaron Mackley. Today is, again, the Preparedness Show. Today we're going to be talking about kind of the ramifications of a power outage, an extended power outage, and what are the first items kind of to disappear first. That's what we're looking at. So we're going to go to a commercial break. We'll be back right after this.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us. Also have a short little special announcement here. We have signed on a new sponsor. We had mentioned this on our Facebook page towards the end of last year. Ware Manufacturing, W-A-R-E, Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nesting boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Make sure you visit them at their website at waremfginc.com. That's Ware, WareMFGINC.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 888-824-7257. Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer is very proud to have Ware Manufacturing as a new sponsor for 2011. You can find their products and their hutches, their coops, their barns and pens at retailers all around you. I think including Tractor Supply, Petco, PetSmart, and others. Just call to find them a retailer near you. Ware Manufacturing, thank you, and welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. All righty, Pat, we are back, and it is now time to go over to the phone lines because it's another great episode of The Preparedness Show with Aaron Mackley. And today we're going to be talking all about kind of the ramifications of an extended power outage and kind of the things that disappear off the shelves first. That is, if in a power outage you can even get in the store to get things off the shelves.
Right.
And most people kind of just, when they think power outage, they think, oh, darn, I can't dry my hair. How inconvenient. Or, you know, I can't watch Days of Our Lives today. Or, oh, you know what, I have an electric stove and I can't cook dinner. I'll just go out to eat. Well, oops. McDonald's doesn't have any electricity either, so I can't go there and eat, and I can't even get money out of the ATM. You know, just long-term effects of something today we think simple as a power outage, but then the long-term ramifications. And then when we go up to the store, if they happen to be open, what are the first things to disappear in that type of situation? Pat, I can remember many years ago, I think it was 1998, we had a tornado come through a very populated residential area just north of Atlanta and Dunwoody, and power was out probably for 3 or 4 days for many, and even longer than that for even more. And so I can remember going over to the closest Target and Walmart, and not a single D battery. D batteries were gone. Bottled water was gone. Toilet paper. I mean, these were big Walmart and Targets. Flashlights gone. Battery-operated radios, short supply, just things like that that were completely gone. I couldn't find a battery for anything anywhere. You know, the local gas station battery gone, bottled water. It was amazing about things that disappear first, other than just the inconvenience of, oh, darn, I can't play my Wii, and now the kids are going to drive me nuts, but long-term ramifications. So it's now we're going to welcome kind of the expert, if you will, in preparedness, and that is Aaron Mackley with Bazoompa.com. Welcome, Aaron. Thank you for joining us. Happy New Year.
Well, thank you, Andy. It's going to be a great year. We're really excited about this year. We've got lots of great plans on things that are coming up that we're doing in the preparedness as well as outside, you know, things that are other opportunities, things we're working on. But, you know, I have to tell you a little, you know, a brief story. Obviously, probably the worst hurricane we've had was, what, the Katrina down in the south. But we went through Hurricane Isabel. And some interesting observations that I made as we went through that experience. As a matter of fact, as we lived back east, we were in Virginia. So we were up the coast a little bit. But we were hit, the eye of the storm hit, what do they call it, the Hatteras and the Outer Islands area, which was about 30 miles south of where we lived. And we found that it was an interesting experience because in something like this versus an earthquake or maybe a tornado or something like that, but hurricanes, you see them coming. They're announcing these things for a week to 2 weeks ahead of time. And they're telling how big it's building. They're going to tell you exactly where it hits. And yet, when it came down to the day when it was coming, everyone was in panic because they hadn't got their supplies of this or that. And I just thought, well, hello, you know, we've been, number one, you live in an earth, you know, in a hurricane zone. Number two, you knew this was coming for 3 weeks and, or, you know, 2 weeks at least. And then after that, and so the first observation was the people who had waited so long to try to get some of those emergency supplies. And just like you said, it is, if you've never experienced going into a store that is empty shelves, maybe in some cultures that's common or even, you know, they would expect it. But in our culture, we expect that, you know, those trucks that just come in and fill those shelves every night, literally, and the stockers, the people who are stocking those shelves. And when that doesn't happen, when a truck doesn't come in, those shelves are empty very, very quickly. So, you know, obviously the things that we want are electricity. We our culture lives on electricity. And because of that, when you don't have electricity, we don't have heating, we don't have lighting, we don't have cooling, such as for air conditioning, and we also don't have cooling for refrigeration, the two different aspects of the cooling. And we rely upon those things. So all you have to do is start thinking, what are the key pieces that we need or that we wish we had? You open your refrigerator door, and what do we want? Well, one of the main things is milk. And first of all, I have to say the number one thing that you should be, you know how to deal with is water. You've got to be able to get water. And as we went through the hurricane experience of Isabel, the aftermath was an interesting to watch the progression. And as I've studied this a little bit after that experience, because that was what, 10 years ago, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I don't remember exactly. That had to be 10 or 11 years ago. Anyway, as I've studied that, the effects and the how cultures, groups of communities respond in an emergency afterwards, interesting thing happens is, number one, okay, the pre-emergency is, you know, the people trying to get everything and they can't get it. And I'm going to talk a little bit about lighting and the batteries because it's the types of lighting and batteries that make a huge difference. But we're going to come back to that. Then the next thing is right after the event itself, and you have no power. The first things people go, you know, think are, you know, how am I going to cook or what do I, if you haven't prepared for that. If you have prepared for that, and that can be anything from being prepared such as having maybe freeze-dried food for 3 or 4 days, which is not hard to store because there's that post maybe 72 hours or maybe double to 72 hours. 72 hours is really kind of the first crisis part. And generally, electricity, unless you're really hard hit, is back on within 72 hours. As a matter of fact, I didn't know it at the time, but I was very blessed to live in a zone, an electrical zone that helped power a couple significant hospitals. And I didn't know this, but I was getting impatient after about, it was nearing 24 hours when they still didn't have power on. I mean, my goodness, guys, get your act together. Well, I didn't have any clue how extensive the damage from fallen trees and things like that were in the Isabel hurricane. And in many, the power outage lasted weeks, at least a week in many areas, weeks in a fairly extended area, and up to a month in the further remote areas. Now, I don't know how many of you, I know at that point I was not prepared for a month of no electricity. But the trend happens is this. First of all, people begin to look for water almost immediately because we get thirsty. And if we don't have running water, and if you don't have, back there a lot of people had distilled water because you just had to have something else to drink. But people are looking for water almost immediately, within hours, okay? So water is your primary thing, and I think we've done a show on water, and if we needed to, we could do another one. So I'm not going to do a detailed explanation now. The second thing is people, darkness is very debilitating to people. Darkness and not having even a little bit of light. So when we talk about having that light, interestingly enough, food is secondary to light, which is, I should say, tertiary, because light is second, and having water is first. We just have to have water very, very quickly. But then light, when it gets dark, people get anxious. People get nervous. A lot of the crime begins to happen at sunset because people get nervous, and then at dark it's even worse. Okay? So a little bit of light, even a little bit of light, is far superior to no light. A lot of light is a little bit superior to a little bit of light. If you know, there's that curve. And having a small flashlight that can maintain some light, or maybe some candles. But I don't necessarily recommend candles just because of the hazards of flames, particularly after a major thing like an earthquake, and you might have broken lines and things like that. So candles are more dangerous. But we have now in our economy LED lights. They came out maybe 10 years ago, roughly, you know, 5 to 10 years ago, very popular in the last 5 years, because LED lights can last a long time on the amount of batteries. And the batteries themselves, if you get decent batteries, you know, even if you are rotating them once a year or something like that and use that flashlight, you can have, they have lamps now, they have lanterns, you know, lamps which sitting there, lanterns which you might take around. That's kind of the definition between the two of those. They seem to look alike, but that's kind of the physical definition. And then flashlights you can take and move around. And so those are your next critical things. If you can get a little bit of a decent quality. Now, you can go to just about any store nowadays that's maybe a fast food, or not a fast food, like a convenience store, and get those little flashlights, LED flashlights that have maybe 5 LED bulbs inside. And those are adequate for some basic things. And I prefer to have, the problem is keeping the kids from playing with them, but I like to have one of those LED flashlights in each of my bedrooms. I can't say that they're always there because they get used and played with. But, you know, you can go buy a set of those for $2 or $3 a piece. So there's no excuse, really, to not having a little bit of light, and that makes a huge psychological benefit, okay? So those are the number two. So water, then light, and then kind of some backup food that, you know, and we actually really like to have Mountain House freeze-dried food. It's easy to store. They're actually pretty good. I'm not an affiliate or anything like that. We just like it. I would highly prefer that over, like, the MREs that a lot of people store from the military. They do have a long storage life, but I don't know. A lot of people tend to have more constipation, and that's not a problem you want to really have if you're not used to those. And so I prefer a little bit of freeze-dried food. Just go to Mountain House or any of the dealers around. It's slightly more, and I say only slightly more expensive than regular food that's prepared and cooked, but they can be full meals. Not only that, but they have these little heater packets that you can buy for, they're like 20 cents a piece, that you can put them under a little package, and it will heat up your food, and so now you can have a hot meal. So that's one of the things that we recommend in the short term, and I say short term, up to a week or so of emergency. We probably ought to have in our next discussion about the storing for longer term supplies of food and rotation of food, but we're not going to talk so much about rotation because we're talking short term, and I'm going to say maybe a week to 2 weeks. Longer than that gets into kind of the midterm. You know, when we talked about fuel, that's the next thing. And here's the interesting thing that I found. People wanted that electricity. The number one commodity short of water was not food. It was gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone was out there getting their generators. And nobody could get gasoline. So what I noticed is in the first 2 days, it was kind of this new thing. People were saying, oh, no. And then after about the third day, you started having block parties all over, you know, those people who did have power and in the newspaper. I happened to work at the newspaper at that time, as a matter of fact. It was an interesting. I spent the night in a big barricaded building where their plant was, their publishing plant, so that I could solve any problems that might occur, you know, if their computer systems went down, they had backup systems and all this kind of stuff. But so I and my family spent the night in a cafeteria, their cafeteria of that building. It wasn't very comfortable, but it was safe. But anyway, after about the third day, you start having block parties where people are getting all of their meat and getting their propane grills out, and because their meat is going bad in their refrigerators, okay? And so the block parties. Well, after about 4 days, block parties came to an end because there was no more, I'll call it hard food, food that we're used to eating. And that's what people had been using. They'd, you know, get in the refrigerator, eat just a little bit. So interestingly enough, for short term, food was not the problem generally. There is a little bit, but most people have some in their freezer or refrigerator that will last them 2 or 3 days, and they have crackers and maybe some cheese and things like that that they can eat and snack on a little bit for the next 4 or 5 days. So that was a minor thing, with the exception of infants. If you have infants in your home, you need to consider diapers and milk, or the whatever, you know, if you've got if they're real small infants and you're still using I think it's Enfamil or Similac or, you know, some of those baby formulas, I think is what they call it. So those you need to keep, you know, if you have two on hand, then you should have four on hand and just kind of rotate through those and keep those available. However, you want about a week supply, maybe a 2 week supply of any of those critical things. And the next thing is medicine. Generally, people who have medicine have a week or two supply because they get stocked up, but you might be at the end of your subscription. So if it's a vital thing for such as maybe it's a insulin or something, you have to have, versus saying that, you know, like cold remedy medicine, that's not a have to have. It's, you're a lot more comfortable with it than without it, possibly, or maybe even allergies, unless you're severe allergies. So medicine, you have to look at the seriousness of the situation. But if you're in a crisis-type situation, you should always have, a week supply on hand. And, of course, you probably already know that if they're in that condition.
You know,
so those are
the thing about the generators, not only the fact that, you know, a lot of people don't have them, and then they never use them, and then they can't get them started, and then they may not have the gas, and they can't buy the gas because the pumps are out because they run on electricity. They can't beg, borrow, mm-hmm. or steal gas. And then if they do have a generator, I've seen in some manuals that I've read and some websites that they're quite loud. And so if next thing you know, if there's civil disobedience, if you will, and you've got a loud generator running and you have a light on in your house, guess where people are going to come? They're going to think, okay, he has something and I want it. He's got a generator. He's got power. He may be using that generator, so he's got food because his refrigerator is running. So there was actually one site I saw where they showed you and taught you how to bury your generator so deep in the ground where it would still run, you would still have exhaust, but when nobody could hear it. And it showed you how to deal with generators if that was one of the things you chose to do. Because, again, if people hear a generator, they think, wow, you have stuff, and I want that stuff. And then here they come knocking on your door, or if you have light. And so a lot of times, going down the list is, if you have a fridge full of food, that's going to go bad first. You eat that first. Then you resort to what's in your freezer, and you eat that second. Then you resort to basically your MRE, your freeze-dried, and your dehydrated food. But most of all of that, you have to have a water source to actually use and utilize that food, and normally a heat source, whether it be propane or wood stove or whatever, you know, solar heating or solar oven and things like that. So not all the time is a generator going to be very, very helpful. Especially as times go on and people get more and more desperate. If you don't think, you may like your neighbors, you may have a great relationship with your neighbors, but I tell you right now, if Bob next door has kids to feed, then you know what do you think he's going to do if he knows you have food and he has starving kids? What will a
exactly.
parent do? What will a man do? How far will a man go to provide for his family, to feed his kids without them starving to death, especially if he knows you have food? So
that is a true principle, but there is a caveat to that. And mm-hmm. as I've read over the last year or two, when that type of situation happens, there's the strongest and the weakest link in our society is the community. It's the strongest link in that if you immediately begin to build, when you see a major situation like this, if you immediately begin to build a camaraderie and let's work this out together among your community, when I say community, it could start with three or four families or maybe 10 families or your street or your cul-de-sac or something like that, and you say, hey, there's going to be a problem, let's work together, and you immediately build that. And they've done research and said those groups, and there are many of them out there, because some of them are pre-organized through, the organization that CERT, C-E-R-T, okay? There's a CERT organization that helps communities get first responders and those kind of things. Those who build those communities become a strong a focus against the criminal aspect that can occur when you get when people start getting hungry. And they work together to make sure that none of them get hungry. That's why they don't get hungry, and they don't get – but then they become a strong – suit against that. But if you don't take initial steps to do that, then you're right. Then it becomes the opposite. And it's our weakest link, is because people will fend for themselves, and they will, there are many people who will do anything when they're hungry. And so, but that usually is going to be in the second, when it starts getting, the civil structure has broken down. And it's not uncommon, and we know that in certain places in Katrina zone and other places, those have happened in localized areas. Mm-hmm. Haiti, that happens. And they're still almost going into a civil war right now because of that same struggle. And so you're absolutely right. The biggest strength and the weakest link is the local community. If it bands together immediately and starts saying, okay, let's build our own local area, then it becomes strong. There is a book that I have recommended people to read. Oh, what's the name of that book, Connie? Do you got it up here? I'm gonna try to find it by the end of it. It is one of the best books that I've ever read. I've read it two or three times. And Andy, if I can't find it, I'll get it to you. Yeah, Babylon. Alas, A-L-A-S, like alas, comma, Babylon. A very, very good book, because it talks about... It actually shows how the people who band together, and of course it's fictional, but I think it's pretty realistic. And particularly when I've looked at the research following that, I find that, yes, it is. I mean, that is very typical of the things that have happened. And for some reason, my computer went blank, and I don't have my notes in front of me. Oh, I hate it when that happens. So let's go... when we go to power, as I went through the Isabel situation, and I watched how this people literally, they had a wheelbarrow, they had a gas can and a wheelbarrow, and they would get that gas can and they would walk, because they had no gasoline in their car and they didn't want to use the gasoline for that. They would walk to find some place that had enough gasoline to fill that, and then they would walk back with that wheelbarrow and pour it into their generator so that they could then turn around and begin to walk to find another source of some gasoline, because the generator mm-hmm. would use it up by the time their life for literally 2.5-3 weeks was spent walking back and forth until some people say, here, we'll bring you some gasoline, here's a better generator and stuff like that. But that was after the power had started coming on. Their life was spent about what? Electricity. And I thought, mm-hmm. church organization, they had a big committee meeting. They said, okay, this was a major catastrophe. We could have it again. What did we learn from this? And everyone said, we need to have more generators. And I raised my hand. I said, no, we need to have fewer generators. We need to know how to use some of this other stuff. The generators were the problem. And they, most of them would not agree. And I just said, you didn't watch what was happening. But there is a form of generator that I do. I am not a generator fan. I will not have an electric generator. I think they're a waste of my time and money as far as I'm concerned. So I don't have an electric generator. I don't intend to ever get one. We, you know, I've talked about alternative fuels. I've talked about, you know, how to get your own water. But what I do have, what I do, I don't have one yet because they are a little bit more pricey. But I would like to have an electrical, a backup solar generator. And the reason for that is because they can be used, as a matter of fact, they are better used if you're constantly using them because it's recharging that battery, and you can tell if your battery is getting weak and how it will charge. Now, it will not charge as much as a gas generator, but if you pay attention to the amount that you charge, and on my website, it's Pazumpa, P-A-Z-U-M-P-A, Pazumpa.com, there is a section that says solar, wind, backup, and then there's a subcategory down there that says backup solar generator, and that is what I recommend that you buy.
Awesome.
It is a solar generator, so that's on, you go to Pazumpa.com, and then there's a tab across the top that says solar and wind, and then down there it says a backup generator or something like that. I recommend that particular generator, and I've tried to find, there's two that I know of on the market, and I like this one better. You can get a smaller one or a larger one. Now, the reason I like this is because the solar generator, you can have enough charge to rotate between a refrigerator and a freezer.
Wow.
And then generating the power. Okay, and then turn it off, and then you wrote, you know, so you kind of put them on a schedule. It says for two or, an hour or two, I'm going to run the freezer, and it's going to get it up to frozen again. Okay? Then I run my refrigerator. And with that, I can keep all of my food cold in there. But and I can still open it and get it closed. You know, you don't want to waste your energy by opening the lot. But, you know, I can get in and get out because opening a freezer or a refrigerator takes a lot of your coldness out. Okay? You'll find that when you close a freezer, it almost immediately starts the engine again because it has to cool it down again. So, but that generator can give you enough generation to get a 60-watt, well, actually nowadays, even you go to the fluorescent bulbs and it's like 23-watt will give you the equivalent of what a 60-watt incandescent bulb for light. So if you pay attention to that, you can charge a small computer to, you know, if you still need to get in and do some work. And, you know, we do. We still need to use those. We rely upon those. So if you want that backup, go to a solar generator. It does not, you know what, you're not going to be getting your Wii running and your TV running, okay? Or if you do, you better have the larger version. And we laugh, but at the same time, I don't, because we're built upon that. And there is comfort.
I agree. I understand what you mean.
There is comfort in there, and we want news, and we want, so to have a TV that's, lower powered and see the newer models, and unless, of course, you're in one of the 50-inch, you know, things, and those are nice to have too, but it's nice to have a little low-powered television or something, or at least a radio. And you, particularly if you're in an area where you are likely to get storms, like hurricane zone all along the east and south corridor or borders of our nation, but also along the western coast where we're more susceptible to the earthquakes. And then, of course, the Midwest where we have all of our tornadoes. So maybe the Intermountain West is more of the secure area. So, but anyway, you do want to have a radio, and there's a radio type that I highly recommend everyone get. It's called the NOAA, N-O-A-A, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association or something like that, an N-O-A-A radio, that's radio bands, because they're constantly giving updates, and they will alert you. You can set them up to alert you when you have hurricanes or major things coming. sometimes they alert you more than you really want to know, and so you got to be careful not to be just stop listening to it. But I like to recommend an NOAA radio. But, you know,
yes,
we talked about those number of things, and really those are the critical things for the first, literally for a week, is if you can have a backup generator for your refrigerator and freezer and keep it even just, you know, a little bit stocked, for a week to 2 weeks, you can survive quite well. Now, if you're starting getting into more than 2 weeks, you've gone through a major disaster thing like a Katrina or possibly an Isabel. And then we're starting to talk a little bit different storage. But the things that I look for literally are water. I don't really pay attention to food a little bit, but I might have some extra stuff on the side, okay? But water, emergency medical, and not necessarily all medical, just emergency medical, things that are like, you know, that you have to have to survive. And then the infant type things, those are critical. And then everything else, you know, we can get by without for the most part.
You mentioned the radio, and you know, I've got several of them through, you know, asking gifts, Christmas, things like that, birthdays that I've wanted, and you can get it for maybe $45. You can get a really nice, and it has shortwave plus AM, FM, and some of them even have a TV1 and TV2, where if you can't watch TV, if maybe somebody, there's a TV station broadcasting somewhere, you can actually tune in via this radio, and it literally, it's like $45. It's a wind-up. It's got a light on it. It's got TV1, TV2, shortwave 1 and 2, and then it's got the NOAA weather radio, AM, FM.
Exactly.
So shortwave is, I've found shortwave is very interesting to listen to, especially some of the new, I've listened to news out of Cuba before, and how it's a completely different spin than the news you get here. News
but
across Europe about what's happening.
You'll also find that during an emergency, shortwave radio gets very interesting, because now you're starting to get the people who do shortwave, the people who do shortwave are generally prepared people. In general, it's not always the case, but people who do shortwave are interested in that kind of thing, and so they're ready, and they're prepared, and so their primary purpose most, and this is what I found as I started dealing with the shortwave crowd, if you will, is they're very hopeful. They want, that's one of the reasons they do it, is they try to help each other. And they are constantly looking out for, hey, we got a problem over here. Is anybody, you'll find this, that during those emergencies, the shortwave crowd becomes an asset to the community. And so a radio, as you said, one of these radios, and I did quite a bit of research. This was about 2 years ago. And one of the best sources of radios is the C. Crane Company. They really make high-quality radios. Now, I have found, based on the I asked them to send me several radios, which they did, and then I bought some of the less expensive radios from some of the emergency supply stores, some of the local wind-up ones, versus some that are more expensive wind-up ones. I'll tell you, you do get what you pay for. In radio technology, there are different types of transistors that are in there that some will pick up and have a clear sound versus some that you can't tell what they're saying. And the difference is information or not information. So if you're going to get a radio, and again, I don't have any radios on my website or anything like that, but I did find that the C. Crane Company, they have some really good radios, and you get what you pay for in general. The more expensive radios are the better ones. On my website somewhere under my video library, I think I have, I know I've recorded them, but we've modified our website some time ago, about 6 months or 8 months ago, and some of the videos are harder to find, and that's unfortunate. But I have a part one and a part two on radios. One is talking about what the radio bands mean, the different types of radio bands versus AM versus FM, shortwave, the NOAA radio. And then the other one is what radios, what you look for in a radio itself. So there's part one and part two on there somewhere. I think it's into the video library, but you can probably search the website for radio. And I think it's in there, but I'm sorry, I don't have that really well prepared. It's not what I was planning to talk about. Maybe that's another one we should talk about in the future.
Aaron, excuse me just a second. You said what company makes the best radios that you found or the better ones? Is it Sea Crane?
Sea Crane.
And how do you spell that?
Let me look. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
So like
because
S-E-A
I can't remember
or?
To tell you the truth. I think it's C, the letter C, hyphen Crane. Let me just go C Crane. Okay, C Crane company. The CCRANE.com. C Crane. Just like that. No.
CCRANE company.
Yep. C Crane company. And they have, and their LED lights are really, really good. And the other flashlight that I do not have one. They're a little bit more expensive, but it's from the research that I've done. They have a relatively new, it's about a year out now, maybe a year and a half out. It's the Maglite makes an LED light, flashlight. And it, you know, Maglite is known for their durability and for their brightness. But they put together a way that they did it is unique in the industry. It changed the industry. It changed the way that they did LED lights in the industry. And so the Maglite LED flashlight is probably the best. But they're like $45 a piece, if I remember right. They might be coming down now. I haven't checked recently, but they're and the ones I'm talking about have 4D size batteries. So they are a fairly long handle. They're big, they're durable, they're easy to work with. But like I said, a little bit of light. If you have a flash or not a flashlight, but a small, you can buy these little lamps, LED lamps that might give off, you know, equivalent of maybe a 30 or 40 watt bulb, maybe even a 60 watt bulb, light bulb, and that lights up a room. You know, you can have a family little, you know, talk, you know, session. You know, what I did find is a lot more people stayed at home and talked during that time.
Nice. Yeah.
And it was really good. And so having a center of light, that's the neat thing about a center of light. You put a little lamp in the middle, and people will cause a circle, and people see each other and talk. It happens. That's why people like campfires, by the way. It's the same principle that happens around a campfire. In the evening, what do? Well, we go around the campfire and we talk. We tell stories. Okay? So those are some of the, you know, we said, what are some of the question was that Andy talked to me about is what things leave the store first? And frankly, I don't care. I just want those three or four things. And as long as I have a little bit of food, I can be okay. If I have more food, that's better, okay? But the critical things is water, a little bit of light, which emotionally makes all of the difference. And another thing is a little bit of, like, hardtack candy that doesn't go bad. I don't know what they're called. But little bags of those, they go a long way. They last a long time. They give a little bit of sugar, and during an emergency-type situation, there is a lot more stress. It's just a natural thing. Uncertainty, darkness, damage that has occurred, injuries. There's a lot more stress. People are running on higher energy, higher octane, if you will. And a little bit of those candies, and you know, unless, of course, you're diabetic or something, and, you know, you need to deal with that. But they make a big difference because it's a comfort factor, and comfort makes a huge difference. The more important things than the food and the water, well, not the water, more than the food, is comfort. Getting us so we feel like things aren't falling apart. And frankly, I am a firm believer in the resilience and ingenuity of people. Natural disasters to me are not a big thing. It's having people come together, and they solve problems. We're problem solvers by nature, and so when you have particular, and some people are better problem solvers than others. But if you have the things that I have to have water and a little bit of food, a little bit of back, you know, food. And then I have the comfort things, like the little bit of light and a little bit of something to keep me so I'm, you know, it's, everything's not dull and boring, okay? Then our brains kick in and we solve problems. And, you know, I've been, I lived through, I don't know if you remember back in 1976, a Teton Dam flood. The entire area where I live, every house in this area, with the exception of maybe two or three, and interestingly enough, ours happened to be one of those two or three, was flooded, okay? But I spent nights, literally lots and lots of nights, working on dikes and things like that. All it took was a little bit of, you know, in the evening, you come together and you have, the same thing would happen. A lantern would go up and people worked around the lantern. You move the lantern, people worked around the lantern. So that light, we want light. And so this probably is a little bit different than maybe what you expected me to say on the call. I don't know, maybe it's not. But
no, I completely agree. I think also that, go ahead, Pat.
Well, I just got one quick question, Aaron. These backup solar generators that you had talked about earlier, that 1800 watt version, is that the big one or the little one?
I can't remember the wattage on it. I think a 900 watt was the small one. If you see two panels, it's the bigger one.
Oh, okay. So and that's just about $2,200. Just for our listeners to know about what you could.
They're a little bit pricey, but I'll tell you. But the thing about the electrical generator or the solar generator is that I would have this and I would be using this on an ongoing basis. I would just hook up some piece of equipment to it, like maybe my refrigerator or something, or my freezer, which is in my back area where I could put that out and have an electrical cord. You probably want to make sure you have an extension cord for it, okay, so that you can back that up and use that so that my generator is constantly charging and discharging that battery, because that's the way batteries work. They don't like to be idle. And so,
doesn't that wear them out, though, Peter? I mean, they have a certain amount of charges and recharges, and then they go dead?
Well, yes and no, but they go dead faster by sitting idle, because the nature of battery is it's an electrical state or a chemical state which caught that the charge and the recharge. So it's like the battery in your car. It's constantly being charged and recharged, and it'll last about 5 years because, you know, they're being discharged when they're starting up, but then your alternator is charging it back up. Now, it doesn't dip all the way down, but you'll want to replace those batteries and use them, and then about every 3 to 5 years, just like your car, you'll replace your batteries, okay? But you can buy the types of batteries that you're going to be putting onto those. But the structure of it using the I can't remember all of the electric. I'm not an electrician, and I had to have the guy explain it to me how it all worked, and I still have, and I did a video on it after he explained it and did a diagram, but I have to refer to it every time because I'm just not an electrician. But the solar, I mean, would I use it all the time? No, but I would certainly during a month use it once, you know, and discharge it and charge it. And just put it on, or maybe I want to put it on my chicken coop, you know, so that
using
the lights for the chicken coop or something, it's being used, and also that you know exactly what to expect from it, how much power you expect from it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, listen, Aaron, it's time to wrap up here. I mean, this has been a fascinating discussion and certainly can go for hours and hours with a lot more information on any one of these topics.
I would keep talking for hours and hours too.
Yeah, that's a gift. That's a gift you have, treasure it. So, but anyway, we thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking to us about what happens when the power goes out and what sort of the sequence of events is. That's certainly, the light is not something I had really thought about as being such a comfort factor. So, I think more about my electric blanket going out.
There we go.
Yeah. Whisper, any last questions or comments for Aaron?
Well, thank you very much for coming on. Lots of notes were taken, and really make some eyebrows raise and be like, I never really thought about that, never really thought about this. And, you know, you talk about the flood back, I think it was in the 70s, and I think nowadays versus then, too, there's a different breed of people out there. And I think about Midtown and downtown Atlanta, where we have these 40 and 50 and 60-story high condo high-rises with power outages and what kind of problems they're going to have, you know, hauling groceries up to their 40th floor, hauling water up the 40th floor, and just the complete devastation of that. People, the massive folks that live in apartments now and condos. It's just it's interesting, depending on where you want to take it. We've got bazoompa.com in the chat room, so you can visit Aaron's website, www.bazoompa.com, and get more information about this. And we appreciate you, Aaron, and we'll see you here in a couple of weeks, which will be, I think, actually, the 17th would be your next, and that's Martin MLK Day. And I don't think we're going to have a radio show that day, actually. I may be out of town on the road. So we'll see you back the first Monday in February for more preparedness topics and show. So, Aaron, thank you very much for joining us, and Happy New Year.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure today.
Thank you, Aaron. It was really, really, really interesting. Okay.
All righty, I'm going to go ahead and get into the Chicken Trivia Contest today, which is brought to you by Hen Saver. The people over at Crazy K Farm. Visit them online, hensaver.com. Today's lucky winner is going to win a Hen Saver hen apron for one of your hens. So how cool is that? And so I'm just going to go right into the question, and then we're going to commercial break, and we'll come back, and hopefully we'll have a winner. The number to call if you know the answer, or want to try to know the answer of today's chicken trivia question, 347-637-3237. Again, that's 347-637-3237, and we're going to take caller number 5. Caller number 5, if you know the answer to the following chicken trivia question today, brought to you by Crazy K Farm and hensaver.com. What is the male and female duck called? Or I guess, what are the male and female ducks called? And Love for Poultry is going to put that in the chat room. So if you're in the chat room, you can see the official question, 347-637-3237. What are the male and female ducks called? We have an answer here. So it has to match our answers. And that's what you want to call. We'll take caller number 5.
Aren't their names Fred and Mabel?
Fred and
Mabel. That's what I call that.
Possibly. Possibly. I don't think that answer will win you any prizes today, but if that's what you want to call in with, go right ahead. All righty, folks. We'll be back right after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your HenSaver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Looking for something? Find it online at Bidbird Auctions. Bidbird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made Bidbird Auctions their new home. And get sold on Bidbird.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Designed for starting and growing game birds, turkeys, ducks, geese, and broilers, Manipro's Game Bird Showbird Crumbles feature 24% protein and a combination of vitamins, minerals, and yeast culture. This complete feed does it all, from growth and weight gain to healthy development and even improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try Manipro's Game Bird Showbird formula and see the difference.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today. The first day back, 2011, January the 3rd. Thank you very much for joining us today. Another great show of the Preparedness Show with Aaron Mackley. And we hope you'll tune in all this week at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Let's go to the phone lines. Caller calling in from area code, which is caller number 5, area code 716. Area code 716, you're live on the air with Andy and Pat. Please tell us your name and what state you're calling from.
Oh, Wayne Brown. I'm calling from New York State, and that would be a buck and a doe.
Let's see. Okay, I've got a different one. We've got, what is the male and female duck called? And that's what we have. And we have, someone put Donald and Daisy. We've got, of course, it doesn't match our answer. Not saying that that answer may be wrong, but it doesn't match. According to the standard of perfection, which I guess what we're looking for to be a little bit more specific.
Mallard and Drake.
Not Mallard and Drake. We don't have that. We've got. Pat, would you want to sound in on this?
Well, no. I don't have my standard of perfection right in front of me here.
No problem. I've got what we have there. So we'll research that, Wayne, and we'll see back if we need to issue another prize. We will do that. But this may be a little bit tricky, so we'll go on. And thank you very much for listening and calling. And if you end up being right, or that's maybe one of the right answers, then we'll definitely we'll work something out so we can get you a prize as well. So that means we go to the very next caller. Caller calling in from area code 765. 765, state your name and what state you're calling from.
Kyle from Indiana.
Hey, Kyle.
Oh, hey,
how are you
Kyle,
doing today?
Thank
you.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to guess a duck for a female and a drake for a male.
Yeah.
That's what I was given was.
Okay. That's what I'd go with.
Okay. And we're going to wait and have the answer pop up here in the chat room in just a second for Love for Poultry, who has come up with this for us. And it doesn't look like we have Dr. McCray in the house today. So I'm looking at the and I think, yep, we have a male for Drake and female duck. So that's what we've got, and that's the answer that we're going to accept. So if you are on Facebook, my friend, are you on Facebook?
Yes, I am.
Okay, just go ahead and Facebook message me your shipping address. I'll get that over to Crazy K Farm, and you'll get a hen saver, hen apron heading your way. And then, again, we got several different answers that are popping up: a hen and a drake, and then a duck and a drake, and then a some others. So we'll research that a little bit more, and then maybe duckling. So interesting question. then we'll have to research a little bit more. But according to Love for Poultry, we have male drake, female duck, and our hen. So that according to the standard perfection, which we'll go by. So we'll see what we can do. We'll have some more announcements for you tomorrow on this. But congratulations. Send me your shipping address, and we'll get you out that prize. 10 seconds left, so I got to run, Pat. And Happy New Year, everybody. See us. Come on back tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
All right, and as always,
when you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.